Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm Andy Murray, and you're listening to The Tennis Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Tennis Podcast, brought to you in association with The Telegraph and with Eurosport. It is International Happiness Day. International Happiness Day, David.
Oh, I will smile.
This is the endlessly happy David Law of BT Sport and Queens and all other parishes. Happy International Happiness Day, David Law.
Thank you very much. I feel like I should be some sort of mascot for that kind of day, personally. I didn't know it was that day, but I brought my smile anyway, and I feel just dandy.
Dandy. David has enough happiness to enable all the Earth's other 7 billion inhabitants to be sufficiently happy to celebrate International Happiness Day. He certainly has enough happiness for me to borrow some. David, I reckon that Roger Federer and Elena Vesnina are enjoying International Happiness Day, don't you think?
Actually, to be fair, they do rival me. I would say this week usurp me, because you're right. Both of them looked absolutely... I mean, who wouldn't be after you've just won one of the biggest titles in the sport outside the slams, and, you know, the one everybody loves in Indian Wells, and it's got all sorts of riches on offer too, loads of points to go with it. But surely just the way that they go about their business is a testament to how I think every champion should feel after a big win, and how the sport should feel. You know, not only Roger Federer, who obviously we know just loves everything about being a tennis player and being Roger Federer, but Vesnina is somebody who went down outside the world's top 100 just over a year ago. I remember commentating on a match of hers on BT Sport where I said she's basically a doubles player now, really, a doubles specialist, and because that's how she felt. She didn't look like she was going to get anywhere near the top 50 again, because she was just... I think she lost 9 first rounds in 2015. She lost 7 times in qualifying. She just wasn't even a competitive player. She's now the world's number 13th ranked player, and she's just won Indian Wells. That is almost arguably more of a shock than the return of Roger Federer to the very pinnacle of the sport.
Yeah, yesterday the finals of Indian Wells were just sheer untempered joy, weren't they? Stan Wawrinka's tears aside, that was the only element of non-joy. Everything else about it was sheer joy, and particular joy, David, yet more good news on International Happiness Day, for the over 30s, of which you and I are both. I mean,
I've slipped into another category.
Yeah, but you will forever be in the over 30s category now. That's the good news.
That's my new positive spin on the age that I've become. Yeah, that is that I am an over 30s. That's what David Brent said, isn't he? 30s, you know? 39, but still 30s.
So yeah, another major tournament, not quite as major as the Australian Open, but another very significant tournament where all four finalists are over 30. It's more than a small trend now. It's what's happening in tennis.
Why is that? I'm trying. You know, when we comment on it, we say it's happening. We say that players are now doing better when they're older, when they're in their 30s, and there are fewer teenagers really making the Nadal type, Hingis type, Becker type breakthroughs. There are some. I mean, we see Denis Shapovalov, we'll talk about him later, he's just won a challenger, but you don't expect these kids anymore to come out and dominate the sport, which is what they used to be doing. Why?
It's also a trend that doesn't sit brilliantly alongside the trope of the last few years, which is the discussion of how tennis is too physically demanding, how the schedule is too physically demanding, how these athletes can't possibly keep it up and they're all at breaking point. I mean, I know Roger Federer is a bit of an anomaly in that the energy he expends to achieve his greatness is, well, by the greatest contrast is to Nadal, isn't it? That for every ounce of greatness, the energy expended is more for Nadal than it is for Federer, just to the different natures of their game. But it is a trend that doesn't sit brilliantly alongside that debate, does it? I mean, both are completely... That debate is still valid, I believe, but is it rather contradicted by the fact that we've got 35-year-olds winning everything?
I mean, I think if you were to use Federer and Serena Williams as your evidence, I don't think that they can be really used in that way, because I think that they are exceptions to the
rule. I agree. Take them out.
You know,
for me, they're the greatest of all time. But okay, let's talk Stan Wawrinka and Kuznetsova and Vesnina then.
Just a quick note on Federer, and I realise we are partnered with The Telegraph, so you know, you might say, I would say this, but I on the way down here on the train, I read Simon Briggs's piece on Federer, in which he held his hands up and said, I was wrong about Roger Federer, and explained why. And, you know, I think all of us, pretty much, I know, Catherine, you did say he would win another slam. I don't think even you thought he would come back to this sort of level.
Absolutely not.
And I don't know anybody within the sport, from a journalistic perspective, who actually thought this would happen or even thought it was possible, really. I know there are many of you listening who are diehard Roger Federer fans, and you know, tip my hat to you, because if you were the one who said, oh well, I believe he can still do it, I can't believe that really was much more than just blind faith. And I understand that. I mean I'm forever going to watch my football team and thinking they're going to win the Champions League. They are rubbish. All right.
Hey, they beat Arsenal at the weekend.
They did.
West Brom could be responsible for the ousting of Arsene Wenger. I don't think
Roger Federer is a different story, because he is, well, the greatest player I've ever seen pick up a tennis racket. But I still don't know anybody who saw this coming. And that in itself makes that article by Simon well worth a read. But
yeah, it is a great article. I completely agree. I don't think there is anybody sensible really claiming they saw this coming. And I include Roger Federer himself.
That's funny,
in that.
Isn't it? He didn't think he could do it either.
Absolutely
really.
Not
to
said
this
his,
level.
His goal for the year was to be top eight by Wimbledon.
Was he just being bashful?
And now he points out that he could actually not play between now and Wimbledon and still be top eight. He said in his press conference yesterday and in his interview with Sky on the court after the match, he said, in theory, I could just sit back and relax for the next few months until Wimbledon.
If he were completely honest, and I think he perhaps might restrain himself from being completely honest, because how can you do it without looking arrogant? I reckon that if you'd have asked him what he really thinks, I think he probably would have said, look, if I'm healthy and I play as well as I can play,
I'm going to win everything.
It is possible, because I think I'm the best. Really, I reckon that's that's what he deep down believes. And you've got to believe that, haven't you?
Who doesn't deep down believe that now, though? He is the best tennis player in the world at the moment. I mean, the race shows that. He is the best tennis player of 2017. Just to go back to what you were saying about how thoroughly unexpected this is. It's more. My brother tweeted something this week, which I think was great. He said, there is an alternate universe somewhere where Donald Trump isn't the president, we're not out of the EU in Great Britain, and Roger Federer crashed out at the Australian Open and Indian Wells in the first round. It's the unexpected. It's the tennis equivalent of these unexpected universe events, isn't it? I believe it is that sort of bizarre and amazing what's happening. So
30s, though, the point you made about the players getting to these latter stages, and it is not just an isolated incident here and there. As you said, we're getting to a point now. I think I looked at some stats on the ATP side not so long ago. I think there was something like 16 or of the top 30 or something like that were about to become 30 plus. I find it extraordinary, and I really would love to know if anybody's got any proper theory as to why that is. So come on, at Tennis Podcast, let us know what you think.
Well, interestingly, this is specific to Vesnina and to Kuznetsova and to Russian Russians in general, but there was discussion of this between Sam Smith and Martina Navratilova on BT Sport yesterday in the lead up to the women's final, and Martina was asked why these Russian women are flourishing so much in their 30s. And of course, Kuznetsova has flourished in her younger years as well. She won the US Open as a teenager, but let's face it, she's flourishing again. And Martina said that it's specific to Russia. It's about almost this sort of, they're taught not to experience the joy of sport when they're young. They almost go into this sausage factory. She described these training centres where they're just hitting shot after shot, but with no tennis balls. They're just hitting air shots, you know, just, it's purely just a conveyor belt of producing champions. And actually, when they're younger, it's not about experiencing the joy of the sport, but now they're older, they're doing it for themselves, they're doing it for the joy of it, there's no pressure, and they're able to just experience it for what it is in a way that they weren't able to in their 20s. Now, of course, the specifics of that situation are unique to Russia, and perhaps she was saying the Czech Republic as well back in the day. That's obviously her experience. But I think there is something in just the very liberated joy of playing tennis. There is a liberation to the way these over 30s are playing tennis, I think, which we don't necessarily see in the hyped up younger players who have everything to prove, you know.
Yeah,
Alex Zverev, if he doesn't get to world number one, he's a failure, isn't he? Because everybody's saying he's a future world number one, you know. Once he gets there and does it all and wins a load of Grand Slams, it's fine. Pressure's off. He can play the sort of liberated tennis that Roger Federer is playing, but he can't at the moment. I mean, he is playing darn good tennis. So that's probably a bad example, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, no, I do. I think it's probably twofold, isn't it? And we've seen it in that microcosm of Roger Federer, that freshness that he has. I think you've just described it well in the case of somebody like Kuznetsova, who's suddenly just feeling the sport again, feeling the love of the game. And I think we're going to see it more and more. I think this will be something that may be a problem for the tours in general, is that players are going to start thinking about their scheduling and whether mental freshness and peaking is going to be the most important thing to them as they prepare their year.
It's probably bad news, actually, for the tours,
yeah,
isn't it? I think they are going to start losing some of the...
It could be a problem.
People are going to start looking at Serena and Federer and thinking,
well,
hang on,
I was trying to work out how many tournaments do we reckon that Roger Federer and Serena Williams might end the year as world number one with having played?
They might play
20, not even 20
well,
between
just looking,
them.
I was thinking about this the other day, just in the immediate term, I think Serena will play Rome and then Paris. I think we're only going to see her now once before the next Grand Slam, and that's in Rome. I think Federer will play Rome, possibly one of the others, possibly not, though.
But, you know, we are looking at about 10 tournaments apiece for the year, more or less, for those two players. And yet they could... I don't know whether it is even possible to finish number one in the world with that. I suppose if you...
I think it is for Federer, because he's got nothing to defend second
half
of the season.
No, but the point is that year-end number one is all about accumulating those points over a calendar year, isn't it? And Roger Federer, at the age of 35 and a half now, and 36 at the end of the year...
Well, August.
There is a real chance now that he finishes this year as world number one. I would actually say I expect that to happen.
Whoa.
The way things are happening.
Whoa. You expect Roger Federer
at the end of the year,
this year as world number one?
At the end of the year. Because, I mean, there's a massive gap that Andy Murray has, but Roger Federer, for this year, has almost got double what everybody else has got so far on this year. He is going to play sparingly. He is going to peak. And he is going to get a lot of points in the tournament.
Does that mean he's going to win more slams this year?
As things stand, I would say yes.
Which is he going to win?
Well, I think he has...
He's going to win Wimbledon,
almost
isn't he?
An equal chance of winning Wimbledon and the US Open, I would say. He has got marginally more chance of winning Wimbledon, I would say, as things stand.
Let's talk about Roger Federer in a little bit more detail. There are so many talking points. Let's first explain to you listeners where we are, because we're back in the Putney Exchange, David. I neglected to mention it in my intro. I can't believe it. I just feel so at home.
We've just had such a fantastic reception. People just walking by, ignoring us. And it has been, well...
Yeah, where's
just
the fanfare?
The normal situation. Actually, there are people who sort of walk past, see two people with microphones, stare,
and then head into HOs.
Then continue their journey. So that's how we like it.
It's good to be back, though, isn't it?
Isn't it? Yeah.
It's good to be back. And I mean, it's good for me to be back.
You're not wearing the massive puffer jacket because of the cold of the train station.
No, we're actually recording indoors for once, which is a very, very welcome novelty, and not in an underground lair as we were last week. Where will we be next week? Tune in to find out. So, in New Wales, Roger Federer. I know we're banging on about Roger Federer, but come on, he's earned it. Let's talk about the backhand, which is like this... Simon Briggs described Peter Fleming describing it on Sky commentary as like a naturalist describing a new discovering a new insect or a new life form of some sort. It's like
a new beetle.
There we go. Yes, insect. I was right the first time. I was so distracted by getting the word naturalist right and not saying not getting it confused with naturist, which is somebody that walks around naked everywhere, that I neglected the insect portion of that anecdote. Anyway, Simon Briggs described that very well, I think, about the excited way that people are talking about a shot that we've been looking at for nearly 20 years now, but actually it's not the shot we've been looking at for 20 years, is it? I mean, and he's given us so many intriguing nuggets of information about this backhand, such as that it was his dad, Robert, who was there in Indian Wells this week, as was his mum, Lynette, who encouraged him to start hitting over the backhand more. And then he revealed that actually all his coaches over the years have been trying to get him to hit over that backhand more and be more aggressive on it, but it was he himself that didn't trust himself to do that. He said he thought he would shank in the biggest moments and he didn't trust himself to do it, which is why he chipped it and sliced it more, particularly on the return. And now, I mean, that's just indicative of the confidence and the freedom that he's playing with. But let's just, as a case study, look at the Nadal match, the Nadal dismantling, and how instrumental the single-handed backhand was
The look on the face of Rafael Nadal told the story. He was shocked by it. I think Nadal came in playing pretty well, feeling pretty up for it, hitting the ball well even in the first couple of games, and thought, you know, yeah, come on then. I want a bit of revenge for last time. And we both picked Nadal to win that match. But I think... It happened, right? Can we get on to the fact that I picked Nick Kyrgios to come through the quarter, and he was only maybe... Stopped.
He didn't come through the quarter.
Well, he almost did.
He didn't come through the quarter. Yeah, we'll get onto that in a minute. It's on the agenda, David. We'll get onto it in a minute.
All right. So I think Nadal was rocked back on his heels. We'd genuinely shocked at what Federer was putting up. And he did not have any answers. I don't even think he played that badly.
He wasn't in the match.
But the one thing I
one
wonder...
One break point.
The one thing I wonder, having watched Ivan Ljubicic throughout his career, and... having not had a chance to speak to Ivan on record about it, because he won't speak to any of us in the media, and I will keep reminding him about
not
that.
Not even David Law, no. Best friend of Roger Federer.
Even when I tried to doorstep Ivan after Roger had won the Australian Open, and he just sort of said, no. And he wasn't being rude. He's basically just decided and agreed with Federer.
You bust out your best Croatian him.
I did,
David.
And the swear words, and he wasn't having any of it. But, you know...
David Law gets exclusive Ivan Ljubicic interview brackets in Croatian, so nobody can broadcast it.
Yeah, and all of its swear words. But no, look, his view is, I just don't want to do any interviews, and I've agreed that with Federer. And also, I think his view is that if I do one with somebody, there's 99 other people who are going to be offended. So, look, I fully respect that, really, and Ivan's a lovely bloke. But I do feel, and I would love to know this for sure, whether he has had an impact, because he had the most sensational single-handed backhand. It was his weapon. It was hit over the top virtually every time. There was a crispness to it, and he attacked it.
If he hasn't had an impact, that's a ridiculous coincidence. He's instrumental.
There's a Ljubicic feel to the way Federer is hitting the backhand, even if it's just sheer coincidence, but it does feel like Ljubicic's backhand.
It's not a coincidence, David. I'm telling you that now. I mean, the stats are ridiculous. He's the oldest ever Masters winner. He equals the Djokovic now on 5 Indian Wells titles. Is he going to win Miami?
If he plays like that, yeah.
The conditions are very different
they
in
are,
Miami, though.
They are. Look, I tell you, this year...
I mean, on paper, they suit him better, actually.
This year, I, you know, We've been made to look stupid with predictions for most of the last 5 years. That's part of the fun of the show. But I don't know. I mean, they are different. What staggers me is to think back to Roger Federer in 2009. I remember being there in Miami, the one where he crushed his racket into the cement.
Losing to Andy Roddick.
Yeah. But no, was it Andy Roddick? No, I think it was Del Potro. I think he lost to Del Potro.
We did a racket smash against Roddick. But that would have been later on.
Yeah,
that would have been a few years later. Yeah,
this,
you're right.
This one,
the racket smashes are so rare.
Yeah,
they do stick out.
I remember this. You know, I remember him in his post-match press conference saying, "I've had enough of this hard court season. I want to go onto the clay." And he looks so miffed. You know, he's in such a different place right now. And this is 8 years on. I mean, the guy was in his late. Well, he was at his prime, really, wasn't he?
Whoa, David. No, the definition
there's a new prime.
There's a new prime,
all
yeah.
Right.
We're all experiencing it as we speak.
Yeah.
Well, we're darting around here in the agenda, but just while you're on the subject of looking back on quotes from years ago that seem like just a different lifetime, somebody put on Twitter yesterday, and I should credit them, but I genuinely can't remember who it is, and I will look it up and I will tweet it because it was a great find. Venus Williams in 1997 in Indian Wells saying she couldn't envisage herself playing tennis for much longer because she couldn't see herself with somebody that would battle through physical difficulties. She said, "I can't imagine myself playing through pain and fatigue. And for that reason, I can't see myself being in this game for too long."
Yeah,
I mean,
right.
that's unreal, isn't it? She is now battling through a fatigue-based chronic illness to be one of the most long-standing great tennis players we've ever seen. I mean,
yeah,
it's
amazing. I suppose the moral of this tale is you don't necessarily know what you're going to be doing when you're 17, when you're 40 odd.
What did you think you were going to be doing when you were 17?
I thought I'd be a snooker player. So,
did
you know,
really?
There we are.
You didn't?
Well, hoped.
There's still time. I don't think there's really an upper age limit on turning pro in snooker.
There is a skill requirement.
Sounds like you've got that element of it.
I am unbeaten on the tennis circuit at pool, though, and I have numerous victims.
Do you want to name drop a few?
No.
Go on. Just give us one.
Fine. No. Ivan Ljubicic, Milos Raonic, Colin Fleming 4 times. That bloke from One Direction. Right, that's enough.
Can't even remember the name of the bloke from One Direction who he's crushed at pool. I think it was Liam, by the way. Anyway, moving on from Roger Federer. I mean, there's
Dan
plenty
Evans.
More we could say. Is there anything more you've got to say about Federer? I mean, we could talk all day.
No, let's talk
we?
About other people now.
Stan Wawrinka. He really cared about losing that, didn't he? I know we've had a bit of stick on Twitter about the fact that Wawrinka's speech is in our agenda, and I know he did that. There was the great one-liner about Federer being a derogatory word, which I would love to say just to highlight how ridiculous it was that Sky commentators were forced to apologise for Wawrinka's use of that word at 11 p.m. Anyway, but I won't say it because then we'll have to put an explicit rating on our podcast and that would be laughable in itself, but anyway, that was what it was, and it was a great little moment. But the fact that he cried, I mean, Wawrinka's expectations going into Masters Series aren't that he reaches the final. His record in Masters Series events is poor for a three-time Grand Slam champion. Yes, he's won Monte Carlo, but basically it's really poor. I remember after the US Open last year when he won the title, he was asked, "Oh, Stan, do you think, you know, playing like this, you could mount a challenge for world number one, do you think you could get that?" And he laughed and said, "Absolutely not. No, I don't have anywhere near the consistency at Masters level events to mount a challenge for world number one." So reaching the final is a great week for him, but it was clear in that speech that he wanted a lot more.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too.
That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hello, Tennis Podcast listeners. David here. Now, you might know that I love a bit of cooking, and I think I'm quite good at it. But if I'm honest, even I get fed up trying to work out what to do every night. That's where Home Chef comes in. Being able to put together a delicious meal without the long prep and the cook times, well, that's pretty cool. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. They have over 30 options a week and serve a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. Now, for a limited time, Home Chef is offering Tennis Podcast listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life and, of course, free shipping on your very first box. Go to homechef.com/tennis. That's homechef.com/tennis for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard it right. Yeah, I think that's what it comes down to. You have to not underestimate how much these people are putting into this. It's not just the couple of hours you see on the court. It's all the other stuff. It's the training. It's the hours awake at night. I can imagine they lie there thinking about tennis and thinking about how to improve and thinking about how to beat somebody. I don't know if Federer does anymore because, you know, he's got a different kind of life. But all those that have yet to fulfill all that potential, it's a stressful business. It's tiring. It's emotionally taxing. And I think that whether they achieve it or whether they don't achieve it, it all comes spilling out, whatever it is, at the end. Or at least, to me, that's the human reaction. I'm sure that I would feel like that if you'd just reach the end of this road for a week. That's what tennis tournaments are. They're journeys. If you get to the final, you've had an incredible journey one way or another, whether you win or lose.
Yeah, and again, as we were talking about last week, I enjoy these glimpses into the humanity of these people because sometimes they can seem superhuman, you know, and him explaining away his emotion as partly his fatigue. Well, we all think of Stan Wawrinka as somebody that just doesn't fatigue. He's not susceptible to those factors in the way that normal human beings are. You know, he has this natural fitness, this natural physical strength that is very different to all other tennis players. Well, he was blooming knackered at the end of that.
He's very relatable, though, I think, Stan Wawrinka. You know, I watch tennis matches with him and I feel what he's going through. When he roars, come on, to himself after a big shot, a big moment, there aren't too many other players that make me feel that moment like he does. I get hair standing up on the back of my neck when I hear him roar, and I feel like he wins over crowds in the process.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. And he certainly won over, I think, everybody watching with his speech yesterday. And he made Federer laugh. I mean, Federer can't seem to stop giggling to himself at the moment. But anyway, next on my list, David, is Nick Kyrgios. And this isn't the discussion that I wanted to have with Nick Kyrgios. The discussion I was having with my brother on WhatsApp yesterday after the final was who in tennis, both now and in history, could beat Roger Federer playing like this. And I said the only person I could think of was maybe Nick Kyrgios. But I don't know, because we didn't get to see that match.
Yeah, it's a terrible shame, because I do feel that if Kyrgios played and served like he did against Zverev and against Novak Djokovic, we would have had a proper match on our hands. And look, we had a good one last night with Stan. But he is able to go through countless service games without the opponent even touching the ball. He can wrong-foot opponents. He can hit the corners on second serves at 120 mile an hour plus. That is Sampras-like. And I don't think we've seen serving like that from a player who isn't just a big server since Pete Sampras. I think that is the most comparable person in terms of what Kyrgios is able to do with the serve. And he's so loose. I mean, the one point he played against Zverev where he was lobbed and he played the tweener and then he did the fading approach shot on the forehand and then he did the dink forehand cross-court volley winner. I mean, I was a mixture of laughing and just jumping out of my seat.
David Law was in an international happiness state. He was experienced pre-international happiness day.
It's a terrible shame that he got ill and was unable to play against Federer. I mean, it's just a real shame. But
it was a real shame also
he's making strides, though, isn't he?
He waited till I'd got into the office at TalkSport to announce his withdrawal.
Yeah, your message to me was full of words that I've never heard come from you before.
I was annoyed on all the levels. I was annoyed on a personal level, on a tennis level. It was all very frustrating. Anyway, we're assuming he's going to play Miami. We know he's in Miami. He's been posting all sorts of things. He said last we heard was he thought it was food poisoning. It was suspected food poisoning. He hoped it wasn't anything more serious, and we've heard nothing to suggest it is anything more sinister. So we hope and expect him to be involved in Miami. Hooray. I hope one day soon we'll see Kyrgios against Federer.
Yeah, I'm sure we will. And of course, we've had it once before. But on the subject of Miami, on the subject of Miami, though, no Murray, no Djokovic, both elbow injuries.
Well, actually, I should let you do this because you're leapfrogging past Dominic Thiem in my agenda. Murray and Djokovic in Miami, but before that, I have to. Scheduling vindicated? Question mark.
Yeah. Well, what do you think?
I think partially vindicated. I think he still only reached the quarterfinal.
He lost in a final set tiebreak to Stan Wawrinka.
Yeah.
His body did not let him down.
No, it didn't. I agree. I think it's partially vindicated, yeah. I think that was a very good week for Dominic Thiem. I still think he should be looking to win Masters Series events.
I still think if he were to look across the draw at some of the other players, I think he will find eventually that he might benefit from scheduling differently, as we've been talking about. I still think there is a chance that he is building a constitution that can take a heck of a lot by playing so much. Time will tell.
Possibly, yeah. I mean, the biggest test will be on clay. Clay is where he needs to be peaking. Clay, let's face it, is where he has the most genuine chance of winning a Grand Slam title. I believe that if he gets everything right and everything falls into place for him, he could contend at some point for a French Open title. So that's the biggest test, I think, because that's where the expectations are highest and where he needs to be peaking. Okay then, David, Murray and Djokovic both out of Miami with the same injury, or certainly an injury to the exact same part of the body. What do you make of that as a fact in itself, and what do you make of what it now does to Miami as a tournament and how that shapes up?
As a fact in itself, it's quite shocking because we're not used to it. We're not used to tennis draws without those two. I mean, I think somebody was trying to scramble around and find the last time that was the situation at a Masters 1000. I've yet to see it, what the actual results of that was, but you know, these are the two players that have dominated the sport for a number of years now, and they dominated the whole of last year, half each, basically. And neither one of them has hit top consistent form this year, either because of injury or because of, well, frankly, not getting the job done on court. Murray won his title in Dubai. Novak won his title in Doha. They've had their moments, but it's not what we've come to expect. It has opened a door for various people, certainly Federer. I think other people now have got an opportunity. I think that the wider point is we have no idea how serious these injuries are. I mean, Novak Djokovic has had this now on and off for 8 months, 10 months, something like that.
It does sound chronic rather than acute.
I did not expect this.
Because the victory over Del Potro last week was sensational. I mean, Djokovic looked close to being back, close to, and then of course the loss to Kyrgios, no shame in that, but yeah, that's precisely it, isn't it? He says it was troubling him in Indian Wells. How, to what degree, we don't know, but
we're going to get a hell of
an
interesting French Open, well, clay court season generally as a result of all this, to see what sort of fitness and form they're able to come back in, because you know, you can imagine elbow injuries being really difficult to treat because you've got to use that part of your body to play the sport. It's a bit like the wrist, isn't it? I would imagine. Healthy recovery for both of those two as quickly as possible, but I think it's a shame, and yet it's kind of interesting for the rest of tennis at the same time.
Yeah, it certainly is. If you're somebody like, well, I mean, Dominic Thiem, for one, but if you're somebody like Thomas Burdick, for example, he's got to be looking at the lie of the land in tennis at the moment and saying to himself, for goodness sake, Thomas, this is the time has come.
Yeah, if there was a time to play your best tennis and take advantage of the fact that the two players that have been mopping up the Grand Slams, well, and Stan Wawrinka, look, I think we sometimes overlook that, but, you know, there is a wonderful opportunity for other players right now to make hay.
Well, and somebody like, this isn't in the agenda, but I'm going to mention it, Gael Monfils. What an awful time for him to be experiencing sort of a weird crisis of confidence in his career. That statement that he put out hours before he was due to play Dominic Thiem in Indian Wells, that was very strange, wasn't it?
It was out of the blue, certainly from my perspective, and I think he subsequently pulled out of Miami as well, and he lost his match in straight sets that night, and from what I read in that statement and reading between the lines, it sounds like he needs a break. It sounds like he's a bit burnt out, to be honest with you, and it gets back to what I said about Wawrinka and that celebration or that moment of defeat when he cried. Is I think it's too easy to overlook the human elements to this sport. It is exhausting mentally, emotionally, and these players put themselves through so much strain because they want to do well so badly for so many different people often. And, you know, they're not impervious to stress, for instance. And I think that we can occasionally jump to conclusions about people's performances or reactions on court. I mean, you know, I know that I'm Nick Kyrgios's chief defender in so many situations, and look, the guy is at fault a number of times to do with them, but I also think everybody's different, and some people get exhausted and something happens, and you've sometimes just got to think, well, what are they going through in their lives? I don't know. I mean, you know, and I think that I don't like to treat people with this one-size-fits-all approach.
Very, very, very well said, David Law. I think it's time we talked about Elena Vesnina a bit, don't you?
Not half. How good was she? I mean, and we talked about it at the start of the show. It's the way she has come back from oblivion, which is what she was in singles-wise.
A year ago, she was ranked 122 in the world, and now she's at number 13. How about that?
Yeah, and she's just a...
And she, not to mention the fact that she was 4-1 down in the second set yesterday.
I don't know her at all, incidentally. I've never met her, never interviewed her, but, you know, her press conferences are worth her winning on their own, because...
She exudes the same uplifting joy that Roger Federer is exuding at the moment. It's exactly the same sort of feeling by osmosis that I get from looking at her as I do from looking at Roger Federer.
Do you know, the other person she reminds me of, people used to say when Kim Clijsters was winning titles, wouldn't it be nice to be Kim Clijsters' friend? Because she'd be great fun, wouldn't she? She'd be a great pal, you know?
Well, Heather Watson, one of my favourite things from yesterday was Heather Watson tweeted Elena Vesnina to say congratulations, and she, I can't remember the exact phrasing, but she said, it's good to see a good girl do good, basically saying, couldn't happen to a nicer person, you're great, which seemed to echo the thoughts of most of the tour. And Ryan Harrison replied to Heather Watson to correct her grammar. It was my favourite thing ever. He said,
Ryan,
I think you mean a good girl doing well.
Wow.
I loved it.
I was not expecting that.
No. I think he meant it in the kindest possible way. But yeah, good for you, Ryan. Newfound respect. Anyway, everybody seems to blooming love Elena Vesnina, and rightly so. She was pure joy yesterday. She was fantastic. There were only about four people in her winning press conference, which I found devastating, really.
Of course, the men's final
was happening.
I was going to say I'm surprised.
I get
but
it.
I suppose I'm not. Really.
I get it, but
it's a shame.
It's nonetheless a great shame. There was uproar yesterday at the women's final delaying the men's.
But isn't that another reason why that is a bit of a problem? The fact she should have a room full of journalists, not having to think about, I need to also cover this men's final.
Absolutely, I would completely agree with that. And the women's final wasn't delaying the men's. It depends which lens through which you're looking at it. But Courtney Nguyen, who does a rival tennis podcast, so I shouldn't really be quoting her. But I do think this tweet is worth pointing out and worth mentioning, because I think it's true, frankly. Not for everybody. Not lots of people took great joy in the women's final yesterday, but some didn't. And she points out that the sweet spots for the WTA in terms of people appreciating it for what it is are so small. She said, two set finals get mocked, three set finals, how dare you, bad finals get mocked, and great finals, people say, who are these no names? And you did hear that being said yesterday, people saying, oh, Kuznetsova, Vesnina, who are these, despite the fact Kuznetsova's a two-time Grand Slam champion. You know, the women's tour can't do right for doing wrong sometimes, and I just wish we could all stand back and appreciate what was a fantastic women's final that proves the depth in women's tennis, the stories in women's tennis, and the strength of women's tennis.
Well, I don't disagree. For me, that's why it needed to be given a sufficient window in order for it to be celebrated in its own right.
I agree. I mean, the scheduling posited it as sort of a warm-up act for the main event, I suppose. Whether that's how it was intended or not, and I suspect it wasn't thought about in those terms, that's how it ended up feeling, I suppose. And that's a shame.
I'm trying to remember. A year ago, we would have had a Victoria Azarenka Serena Williams final, followed by a Novak Djokovic Milos Raonic final. Now, the women's final was by far the better, by far the most more eagerly anticipated because of who was playing in it. And you know, and I think that it was still the same way around. I mean, I don't know 100%. I haven't given enough thought as to what should happen, but it does feel to me like if you built in a bigger window for both of those finals so that they could be properly celebrated and reported upon and covered, that would be to the benefit of everybody.
Yeah, well said. So Vesnina ranked at 13, her first ever Premier mandatory title. It's all amazing. Kristina Mladenovic had another very good week. I knew you wanted to talk about her. Is she headed for the top 10? She's at a career high ranking
now.
Yeah,
I think she probably is. I mean, her game certainly appears to have fully matured now, and she's such a good player to watch because she does so much stuff. It's not just one way of playing the sport, and yet she's tall, she's powerful, she's got an ambitious way of playing. She wants to get to the net, she wants to use angles. I just really enjoy watching her, but I feel she's really under-delivered over the years. Now, I think the bigger question mark is consistency. Even now, even though she's reached a final and won a title this year, I still think there is a question mark over whether she will ultimately have enough consistency in her game and her mentality in order to keep delivering. But, well, the portents are positive.
I think there are some limitations in her technique personally which look to me like they could be worked on. I certainly think the serve could be worked on. Given her sort of stature and her physique, the serve really should be a weapon in her game, and it's not quite as much as it should be. And if she could really work on that, I think she'd be a force to be reckoned with, especially as she's so comfortable coming up to the net and playing around the net because she plays so much doubles. Of course that helps, and it helps with her returns as well. I think she could be a really complete player if she could just work on those couple of things. Angelique Kerber, it was a decent week. We were talking last week about who is Indian Wells big for, and of course Kerber, we knew already that by virtue of Serena's withdrawal that she was going to go to number one, and we were all willing her to have a good week to reflect that. I suppose she had a goodish week, is that what we'd say?
I still, you know, based on the performance we were talking about a week ago when she beat Petkovic, Vesnina went on to win the title. So, you know, I always think you have to catch things in that regard. What did the player that beat you go on to do? Well, she went and won the title.
But she didn't even make much of a match against Vesnina.
I just think that Kerber playing her best tennis wouldn't be losing that. I don't think. And look, she said in her post-match press conference, I struggle to find my game. And ultimately that's what it comes down to. Until she can rediscover it, we're going to be having the same conversation.
Will she rediscover it in Miami?
Possibly. I don't know. I my personal view is that I think that she's going to have problems for quite a few months.
Yeah, I'm afraid I think I agree. I think it's all sort of, it's all coming too quickly. She needs to do a Federer and just take a couple of months away. I mean, maybe clay sort of will be de facto that because she has so much less to defend on the clay. The pressure comes off a bit, but she's still going to go into the clay court season as the world number one, which, regardless of what you did last year, comes with pressure. So I don't know. Miami obviously coming up, it all comes so thick and fast at this point in the season, doesn't it? Miami's coming up. A few other bits and bobs away from Indian Wells that have been happening this week. Annie Ashbedene won a challenger title, just about the most competitive challenger title you could possibly wish to win. And it's been a really tough year for Annie Ashbedene. I mean, there have been times in press conferences with him where I've felt like I've been in a therapy session, you know, and he's sort of having this cathartic experience, pouring his heart out, and it's always been a bit awkward because you can see how much this guy is hurting.
Yeah, now I've wondered whether he might actually throw it in at some points and think, I don't need this, or I need to take a sabbatical or something like that. You're right. I mean, that challenger, I remember, I think it was Stakovsky at the start of the tournament saying, you've got to look at this challenger draw. The acceptance list is ridiculous. And to be honest, it wasn't until finals day when I realised Bedene was in it and I thought I'd have a look at the draw. And you see the players he's beaten, Paolo Lorenzi, we had Andre Rublev, Jared Donaldson. These are very, very good players. And the cutoff for that draw was 93 in the world to get into a 32 singles draw. 93 was the lowest ranked player. Bedene wasn't even ranked inside the world's top 100. You know, this guy had to get in as an alternate. So for him to come through that draw, and I think it is a tournament that he's won before, he's reached the final before, so, you know, some places you just happen to feel really good. But that is a huge win for him, psychologically, both in terms of his tennis as well, and also now it gives him a chance of getting directly into things like the French Open and Wimbledon. So hats off to him. He seems like a really nice bloke, and I'm really pleased for him.
Yeah, he does. I feel exactly the same. Also in ATP Challenger Tour news, Denis Shapovalov won a title last week, beat Ruben Benjamins in the final and beat his Canadian junior mate Felix Auger-Aliassime, whose name I know you love to say.
Can't wait to say his name
last week. Oh, in fact, I'm supposed to say Shapovalov, aren't I? But it just doesn't flow off the tongue like Shapovalov. So I'm just going to persist with Shapovalov until I get told off by the powers that be. Anyway, he's now officially next gen, Denis Shapovalov. I mean, ATP marketing people are rubbing their hands together in glee because there are official
road to Milan.
There are official requirements for being hashtag next gen. You have to be under 21 and in the top 200. And this win from Shapovalov takes him inside the top 200, so they can now officially tout him as hashtag next gen.
They can. And also,
he's still only 17.
Yeah, he's in that top 10 now on the road to Milan, which is this under 21's tournament in November.
Oh, right, that was it. I thought you were going to say something.
But actually, given this is the guy who obviously had that horrendous situation at the Davis Cup, caused by himself.
6 weeks ago. You know, I mean, we were debating, you know, whether that might affect him for months to come.
Yeah, and look, he did wrong. And there is an argument to say he perhaps should have been punished more harshly given the severity of what he did. But it was unintentional, I'm sure of that. And he, I think, from the way I've seen him react to it, has learned his lesson. And look, isn't it great to be talking about his tennis? Because he's a rich talent. He plays the game with a wonderful sort of joy. And hopefully he's going to be an exciting player for many years to come.
It's another one-handed backhand as well. They're taking over the sport again.
I got one of those. Well, I've got a one-handed backhand. It's not very good, but...
finally, in any other business, I never thought I would be typing these words together in a 2017 tennis podcast agenda, but Yunus Al-Anawi, in inverted commas, comeback, because somebody has spotted that he is in the qualies draw at a Bahrain 15K event. And he won his first round, six love, six love.
He's a comical character, isn't he, Yunus Elanari? What I always, will always remember him for, we talked about it in the past, is the 21-19 final set he lost against Andy Roddick at the Australian Open in 2003. Also easy to forget that this is a guy who, the round or two before that, beat Leighton Hewitt in his home Grand Slam, who was then world number one and coached at the time Elanari, just to add further intrigue, by Jeff Tarango, who has never coached again, certainly not a top player on the ATP circuit, who I have to say, I mean, I commentate with Jeff Tarango, heck of a lot to offer in terms of his, the way he sees the sport. He really could help somebody if they had the guts to employ him, as far as I'm concerned.
Former guest of the tennis podcast.
Yeah, absolutely. Yunus Elanari.
Future guest of the tennis podcast, I'm sure.
A coach himself now. So very interesting to see. And just quickly, Catherine, on the terms of any other business, anything else you want to say about
Well, I was just going to point out that I think, as you say, he's coaching himself now. He's working for the Qatari Federation, and now he's working with juniors, many of whom are entered in the draw in this 15K. So I rather suspect what's happened is he's realised he's there. They've offered him a wild card into qualies, and he's gone, well, that will help pass the time, and so he's done it, and he's won his first round. Yeah. six love. So,
and on the subject of comebacks, albeit a rather more straightforward one, Milos Raonic returns to the circuit having missed India Wells. He's going to be in Miami, so it'll be interesting to see whether he can capitalize after his injuries. And just announced he is going to play at Queens, the Aegon Championships, where he reached the final. Remember when he was a set and a break up against Andy Murray in the final? Then he played him again in the Wimbledon final. What do you think?
And he said in his speech on the court, by the way, David, king of the segues. Well done.
Well, thanks.
And he said in his speech on court, he said, I'll see you on centre court for the final in 3 weeks' time.
Is he ever going to win Wimbledon?
Is he ever going to win Wimbledon?
Yeah. I think he will.
Do you?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think, yeah, maybe 60-40 he will.
Okay,
I think
so
he'll get
we
one.
Think he will,
I think he'll probably get one. McEnroe's been quite outspoken on him in the past few weeks, hasn't he? Said the only thing that's holding him back is his head from winning Grand Slams.
Oh, I hadn't heard that. Very interesting.
Yeah, he said it. I'm not sure who he said it to, but probably anyone that'll listen. anything else, David?
No.
On that bombshell. We've been the Tennis Podcast from the Putney Exchange, brought to you in association with The Telegraph and with Eurosport, not in association with the Putney Exchange, but
we're open to offers.
Shop partners are. It's a gap in the Tennis Podcast marketplace. So we've been the Tennis Podcast with no coffee shop partner for the moment. We'll be back soon.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.